Skype of Cthulhu presents Delta Green Viscid.
There's some details I don't quite remember. I think, Jim, your character, and Emily, which is Heinrich's, which I don't think you'll be back on Sundays. Anyway,
he's driving somewhere.
Ah, there you go. So he is still playing on Sundays though. Okay, good. I think you guys are staking out the medical examiner's office in Snohomish, waiting to raid it and make sure no one comes in. Is that right?
Yes. I believe we had a plan to go in during the daytime using ID and a nice little infiltration, and then the keeper talked us out of it.
Yes. Talked us out of that and jail, probably, I think.
Consider that your own idea, Roll, talking you out of it.
So, yeah, I think the keeper suggested that a nighttime raid with breaking doors and, possibly ending up in burning the place down would be a much better idea, so...
Gotcha. I guess I wasn't sure if you were still staking that location out or if you were going to the proper Seattle medical examiner's office to talk with or round up some of our agents there.
I don't think so, because I think the whole point of the ME's office was to get into, right, to get the body. So we were trying to get the body out, not to get our people in to examine it, to do an examination there, because that probably take a long time, right? We're going in to try to get the body out, to get it to Walters and Kane, presumably.
Gotcha. And that's the body of the girlfriend / dancer of Greaves from the house at the beginning? Or is that Greaves himself?
I think it's Greaves himself, right?
One of them, I think, was decomposed, and one of them was intact, but I don't remember which.
Well, it's whatever is left of both of them.
Gotcha.
Because no one else was able to get access. Yep. Some jurisdictional nonsense that Gary's character wanted to try to sort out through the courts, but was dissuaded by the keeper of doing so because it would take too long.
I feel like he was still doing it.
Yeah, I think he was not dissuaded.
I think what we were trying to do is keep Gary's character from actually receiving that information to contain it and, like, destroy the body. Is that ring bells? Or am I wrong making that up?
Yeah, we certainly weren't trying to destroy it. I think we were just trying to... I think the concern was that the legal process was going to take some large number of days that we felt we couldn't wait that long, and we might not win. I mean, it could go anywhere. Right. So
yep,
and it might publicize things.
Yeah, so gotcha. We wanted to make sure that we got it to our people as quickly as possible.
Gotcha.
But I think he was still dealing. He was still pursuing those channels, just
in
behind
case.
His back. Right.
And so the agents at the Seattle ME's office were, I don't remember what you guys were doing, computers and just kind of, do you have leads from there that you were investigating? That's,
Silverman was flying to D.C., or not Silverman, we were flying, somebody, Sean was flying to
I
D.C.
am.
To
and
meet up with Silverman.
Right, yeah. But you were waiting, right, for the flight?
No,
I was
Crane's
going
on the plane.
Okay,
I am
awesome.
On the plane.
I think you are en route.
Yeah,
perfect. So that's, I guess, Max and Gary's characters who were in the Seattle office.
Yeah,
I know. We've split up characters before, but. Have we? I guess we have. I was going to ask if we've ever split them up across the whole country, but I guess there was the two-headed serpent when we spread them out across separate countries. So
Yes,
well, we also yes. did the we did a little bit of that in the what was the one that we went down to the Midwest and met with the snake priests.
That was Two-Headed Serpent, where we had a group in Oklahoma and a group in Iceland.
No, but I was thinking of it. I'm thinking of a different one. I think where we were, or maybe I don't know.
The other one.
I'm thinking the one where we're the punk band.
Oh, the Curse of Cthulhu.
Did we split up there?
I think because we split up. The punk band split up a couple times also around the country.
Not as much.
Not like this. not like this.
Right.
It was like San Francisco.
First
and
time keeping, and Jim was like, "Well, we'll just still go to two different places. Like, bring it on. I don't care."
We probably did that in Masks a little bit too, with all the different leads we had there way back.
I think maybe. It was lethal for you guys to split up, but anyway.
Well, I'm sure this will be fine. There's nothing dangerous in Washington, D.C.
No.
We had so many people in going in the the snake one that Sean was running. It was probably easier, I'm guessing. They had less people to worry about in one location. Or am I making that up because it's still a bunch of people split?
Only Sean can answer that.
Unmute. Yeah. No, I'm trying to blank it all out, really.
Okay.
Anyway,
well,
Delta Green. Anne's in a plane. She's probably in business class. Delta Green's got a good budget. Yeah.
I feel like we have to pay for these ourselves. I feel like that's part of the weird rules in this game.
Okay, she's in economy.
there are a whole load of rules for basically acquiring things and paying for stuff. So, yep. I think that did come up. Did I not make you? I should have made you make a.
I remember you mentioning it somehow. Yeah. I don't know if it actually happened or not.
So I think sort of a standard expense, you make like an int times 5 roll. And yeah, there's various. If you want something particularly out there, there are ways to get it. But the question is, what are the consequences of acquiring it? Usually what happens for like a standard expense, if you fail that roll, it sort of implies you're stretching your credit a bit too far. Possibly damages your bonds. Maybe your wife is a bit upset when she opens the credit card bill this month. And anyway, do you guys consider that your recap?
That sounds like a recap.
Yeah.
Okay then. Shall we begin with team break into the Emmy's office?
Sure.
So who is that? That is Jim, Michael Wood. Anyone else? Oh, you actually have this written down. Emily, you have Detective Dunster with you. Is that correct?
That's Heinrich's character.
Yeah.
Well, I think we were going to wait till evening to break into the ME's office.
Yeah.
But I think long before that, I'm sure that Agent Chovasky and Agent Green would have gotten to the PI's office, right? They were going to go or talk to the PI, or did they do that already?
No, we were going to the home of the one surviving or not hospital.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, well, PI. Let's do that first. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Because at the moment, we Emily and I would just be staking out the Emmy's office, waiting for cover of darkness before we break in. So. Not very exciting, I hope.
Okay. Right. So you guys. So let's go to Lester and Marco. Marco is also not here. I don't have a character sheet for Marco. Anyway, Detective Green.
Yes. We were going to try to go to Mr. Belton's office, who runs the PI firm of Denoit, Belton, and Wells. Denoit is retired, and Wells is in a medically induced coma from an attack that morning. So I think the only thing that's left is his personal house, which I think we're going to.
Yep. Okay. So, you know, it's a comfortable little family home in the suburbs.
Yep. Yep.
And it's probably at this stage, I think it's getting on for late afternoon at least.
Okay.
So yeah, you can.
I believe the first thing we'd want to do, since there have been attacks, is to see if we can do a drive-by or something to see if we can find any other. I think the idea is there may be another Delta Green agency or other hostiles out there. See if there's any other people staking out the house or any other eyes.
Sure. Watching. Give me a, I guess, a search roll.
Search. Okay. Let me find that skill. Well, that's no good. It appears my character sheet has only got my character's name on it. I gotta find a way. maybe we could come back. Oh, there it is. It, for some reason, it had to load. Okay. Let's see.
Okay, that was important anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Search. There we go. Okay. I've got a 60% in that. That sounds good. And a 58 is a pass.
Yeah. So you can certainly do a. Yeah, just drive around the block once, and it is leafy suburbia. There are probably at this stage of the day, the kids coming home from school. You've got the school buses coming around, dropping people off. You've got people coming into their houses with shopping. You've got delivery drivers doing their final rounds. You don't see any
other eyes on the house.
Yeah, there's not like there are cars with tinted windows staking out the place. As far as you can tell, it looks fine.
Okay, we will park in either the driveway or the street and walk across, knock on the door.
Yeah, a older man, probably in his late 60s, opens the door. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Belton?
Yes.
I'll have, I guess, Randall flash his badge. Agent Chovosky. I'm Detective Green. We'd like to ask you a few questions about what happened this morning.
Yes, of course. Please come in. Can I get you a drink of anything? Tea, coffee?
Coffee would be great, or you know, some water.
Yeah. His wife will come and introduce herself and. You can tell he is clearly concerned and upset at the events that have happened recently. You get the impression he is used to dealing with law enforcement officers and is certainly keen to help in any way he can. So he will eventually, once everyone has a drink, sit you down in his living room and say, agents, how can I help you?
Well, I'm sure you've talked to the the local authorities and everything this morning, probably a lot, but you know, we haven't an event of this magnitude, an explosion and whatnot, you know, we're interested in the FBI has a another task force or whatever here, and we'd like to just ask a few questions. First of all, was there anyone in the in your offices when the explosion occurred?
Well, no, not the. We have a secretary, but it was well after closing time. It happened at almost 3 a.m, I think. So,
okay.
Have you heard any more news about Evelyn?
No, at the time she's still in the still in the medical coma. She's progressing, so I know that's difficult. Can you go over the circumstances of her shooting again for us again? Was that something I know we have the ballistics back. It was a high powered rifle, which is unexpected, but is there any, you know, what were, was she just sort of walking along the street or circumstances?
He looks a little confused at this being asked for the details. It's like, well, I would have thought you would know this already. She was having lunch, as far as I can tell. She was at a Mexican restaurant and yeah, shot by some kind of sniper rifle, it sounds like. I mean, she's clearly run into something, unfortunately, well beyond our capabilities to deal with.
Right. And I know some of the questions will be the same you've answered before, but again, just, it's always best, you know, when you're sort of grasping at leads to maybe recover the same ground, different people, things like that, instead of the, you know, the reports kind of get first person account. So, are you, I know you run the offices. Were you aware of what she was working on at the time?
Vaguely, you know, we usually work on, you know, jealous lovers and that kind of thing, but she was doing something for a company named Potentia Holdings, I think. It's, as I say, not really our usual business, but I can't remember the address that she was surveilling, but it had something to do with a retired doctor, geneticist, maybe.
Ah, I see. So was she on a stakeout at the time?
As I say, we tend to work independently. You know, all the majority of her case files would have been at the office. I may have some. I could check my email and see if I have anything that she's put in a shared drive. But I honestly don't know the full details.
Well, that would be fantastic if you could. You know, any information. Of course.
Yeah. Okay. If you wait here for a few moments, I'll go and see if I can find anything relevant for you.
Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate your cooperation.
Okay.
And he's gone, we'll kind of look around the room and see if there's any like photographs of people we know that might pop up or anything like that.
No, I mean, you've got the usual.
Yeah.
There's clearly a couple of kids that have grown up and left home. You've got photos of them growing up, and there's graduation pictures and the like. You do actually find what you assume is a photo of the three partners, Evelyn, Dino, and Belton. There's clearly Belton, another older gentleman, and a younger woman, and they are standing in front of the detective office.
Okay, that's good to be able to get you know, a photo ID, so we can you know, make sure we're talking to the right people. No one's pulling anything on us. I imagine that's, you know, really is Belton there we're speaking to and whatnot. Okay. Yeah, nothing else to be gained, I don't think, unless he brings the evidence back.
Yeah, about 15 minutes later, he comes out of his office. He has a stack of papers. You sort of heard the printer going in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sort of hands you a sheaf of files. This is everything I could find. I'm sure she would have had more of her own notes, and she was the most technically literate of the three of us, but even she liked to do things the old-fashioned way.
Paper trail. I understand. Well, if there's anything else you can think of course, and I will have you know, maybe give him, well, we can give him my number, I guess, since
sure.
Randall's not here, and please give us a call, and thank you very much for your help.
Seems glad that the authorities are investigating, and you get the impression he's not holding anything back. He's not.
Good. Okay. I think the next thing to do would be to one of us take a look at these notes while we drive over to Emily Wells' apartment or house or wherever she lives, and maybe do a little B&E ourselves to see if there's anything inside.
Okay, you want to head to Evelyn's house, did you?
Yeah, Evelyn. I'm sorry, I said Emily, but yeah.
Sure, yeah. Okay. Yep. Sure. So looking through the notes that you have, you have some paperwork on a company called Potentia Holdings Incorporated. Is this, have you heard of this company before?
Yes.
I think you have. Yes.
Washington DC firm with I think Silverman's the guy's name. Anne is on the way to investigate him at the moment.
That's right. Yeah. Basically, there's sort of a rehash of a lot of the existing publicly available information you already have. Mm-hmm. You do find yes, you have a little more information. So Potentia reported $300 million in income last year. It has a single employee, Robert Justin Ortega.
Ortega?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a new name.
Actually is listed on this sheet as Robert Justin Ortega, PhD. There's a few notes that imply that Ortega owns a company called Ansile Incorporated, a DoD contractor, which produces a next generation body armor called Titanite Weave.
Okay. What was the name of that company? I'm sorry. Those are two different holdings, right?
Ansile Incorporated.
Ansile, okay.
Do you... Actually, I have your character sheet here. Do you have a cult? No. Do you have history? No. Do you have archaeology? No. Okay.
Any hope for Randall?
I don't have Randall's character sheet.
Oh, okay.
I saw Randall just post something on Slack.
We do have base on some of that. I mean, I could take a shot.
If you, I mean, you can certainly Google the company. But Ansile is the name of the shield of the war god Mars.
Ah. Okay. Good. Okay. Don't really want to send this information in text, but I'll check my watch and see if Anne has landed yet in DC, and I imagine she's still in the air like we've established, and yeah, make a note to call her around the time she lands to let her know to look into Ortega while she's there in DC, and yeah, unless there's something else from the notes, we'll look to do our break-in when we get to the other place.
Okay, so you can easily find Evelyn's address from databases that you have access to.
Mm-hmm.
It's an apartment building, a bit closer to the city. When do you want to attempt to break in? Do you want to wait for the
cover
evening.
Of night. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if it's an apartment building, there's more chance, you know, maybe if it depends if it's like after working hours, there'll be a lot more, you know, traffic, people going in and out. If it's, you know, still during the working day, then now might be the best time. And also, you know, it depends on what kind of apartment it is, how sure. close it is, or you're
okay.
secure.
So let's just say that you go now. You are able to break in. Not going to make you roll for this too much. The apartment is it's a bit of a mess. Not like it's been turned over or anything. It's just Evelyn lives on her own.
Have the cops been here yet? I mean, I don't know if she'd have to give them, you know, access and wait until she comes out of a coma, or if, you know, if we're lucky.
You get the impression maybe people have been here, maybe they've, you know, you can't, I mean, if you, you can't tell either way, basically.
Yeah.
It's not like there's police tape over the place. This isn't a crime scene.
Right.
You wander around the apartment. You find, actually, you won't find that. She would have that on her. So, you don't find anything like a laptop or phone or anything like that. The apartment is small. It's quite easy for you to search it. You find no sort of home office with notes and files. You get the impression she either had everything on her or had it at the detective agency.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, and you know, we do have a local detective in working with us in Duncer, Detective Duncer, and we've also, you know, I've got Slavosky with me, so we can just make some quick calls or whatever and see if there's any info that they, you know, if they.
If they, and you went.
We might have lost him again for brief.
We lost.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
No, you know, while we're out and about, we may as well go to the scene of the bombing, you know, their offices or whatever, and just have one quick look. I don't expect to find much, but you never know.
Sure. Yeah, you can drive by the sort of mini mall where the office had been. It's been leveled. You know, it's
yeah.
completely gone. There is still you know, a police presence there. Obviously, there's no flames or anything. The fire's being put under control, but they're mainly keeping people out because it looks like it's right. quite dangerous.
You can always flash a badge if we want to get a little closer, talk to some of the officers.
They're bored out of their minds, and they'd be quite pleased to chat away and tell you everything they know. Really, one of them mentions that. The one of the witnesses at the scenes reported. You're at the site of the explosion. So there's basically not much you can find there.
Okay.
But yeah, why the hell not? One of the officers there will say. Did you hear about the one of the detectives who worked here was shot. It's crazy with some kind of like military rifle.
Yeah. Nuts, right? I mean, she was in a Mexican restaurant from what I heard.
Yeah, apparently a witness at the scene said that she dropped her phone and bent to pick it up at the exact moment the shot happened. I mean, it apparently went straight through her shoulder and upper body, but you know, it could have been her head in the crosshairs.
Wow, yeah, that was lucky, huh? Yeah, do you know if they found anything other than the ballistics, you know, the side of the shooter, anything like that? We didn't hear about that part.
No, apparently none of the witnesses saw anything, but they described a gray sedan.
Gray sedan.
Yeah, it was incredible, though. Even after being shot, she shouted for others to take cover and even fired back through the window of the restaurant at a car parked across the streets. I mean, wow.
That's something. She's tough stuff, huh?
Yeah.
I imagine we've got her phone, probably, huh?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much, man. That's some great info. And from there, you know, of course, we'll check and see if we do have the phone or any other. I guess we can go to the hospital and the first thing would be to get her phone if we think she's still in a coma, and we can always make a stop at the hospital to see if she's
sure,
you know, revived, and maybe tell them to call us if they
This is going to take you some time, and just
sure
the exactly. driving around has taken some time. It's now you know, probably getting dark. You can certainly head to the hospital and try and you follow up with the officers there and try and mm-hmm. figure out where the evidence is being stored. And it turns out, yes, they have a phone, they have a laptop, they have various other things she had in a bag.
There we go. Those are our leads. Okay. So and we've got the our detective in the scene, Dunser, we can go back to the station and grab that. I'm sure that'll be, you know, pick that up later. But yeah.
Basically, just gonna take time and, dealing with bureaucracy. Okay, so shall we probably as Agent Crane is flying over maybe even the pilot's announcing that he'll be coming into land in the next hour or so.
Sure, I waved at Carlos as I flew over him. I waved back.
Yes, Carlos, what did you want to do? You wanted to go to the Air Force Base. Okay, so you'll make it there.
Yeah, I left behind the wife of David Dooley, who I spoke with her at her business, and I went to her house, and then
went to was driving again across Montana to get to the Air Force Base. Yeah.
Okay. What's your plan when you get to the Air Force Base?
My plan is to speak with the people he was training with and basically do some talking and schmoozing and try to dig up if there was anything at all suspicious or off or any sort of cover-up about his death.
Okay. So yeah, if your plan is to drive up to the Air Force Base itself, there will be a, you know, security checkpoint.
Okay.
And there's a young Air Force guard there who will sort of walk out and ask for your papers.
All right. Well, I will tell them that I am here to see. So I don't know if I have any names, but I feel like I should have names. Lee Family Air Force Base, associated with David Lee. Yeah. So I feel like we looked up names of people that were associated with him on the base, and that's why I'm headed there. But I don't think we have anything specific written down. So let's say that I will have called on the way the actual people in question and said that I would, I think I'll be fairly straight up and say that we're with the military, the Air Force Safety Records Department or something, and that we're investigating training accidents and sort of the history of them, and I'd like to speak to them about the one that involved Lieutenant Uli or whatever he was. And so I guess that's really the first thing is if I get success from them, then they will have left word at the gate to let me in.
Okay. So you are ex-military, yes?
Yes.
You have contacts, I assume, still in the military.
I believe I have a did I burn that one? I have a... Ooh, yeah, I burned my gunnery sergeant bond at some point. So I probably have contacts. I don't have a bond.
Okay. You are trying to look for people that would have known Uli when he was stationed here.
Yes.
Okay. Give me a bureaucracy rule.
All right. So that is a 04 under 30.
Okay. You are able to tell me who your contact is and how you're able to find someone that would have potentially access to these records.
So I I think that I have a contact here that runs the munitions depot, mm-hmm. and as sort of part of the
You know, this is the network of people that actually get stuff done and make sure that material gets from where it is to where it needs to be, despite all of the paperwork and stuff. And so I think, so this is somebody in that network and who has connections, certainly to, you know, to the local records.
Sure. So what they, you know, they say, okay, 1992, you say?
Yeah.
Okay. Might take some time. Let me go and see what I can do. I'll call you back.
All right.
And, you know, a couple of hours, two, 3 hours later, you get a call from your friend. He says, what the hell was this guy involved in? Some kind of black ops shit.
That's the real question, yes.
I mean, he used to be assigned here. Shortly after receiving his commission, but back in the 1990s or 1990, he was reassigned, as far as I can tell. But there's just no record after that. It doesn't say where he was based. The strange thing was, he was still assigned here, but wasn't based here. Yeah, then just like he didn't exist anymore.
So he was assigned to the base, he was somewhere else, and then how long before he had his training accident after he got after he disappeared from daily life?
So it looks like it was, you know, a year or so after.
Okay.
And the somewhere.
The paperwork that I saw in her house, in his wife's house, with his discharge or not his death papers, sort of implied that he was still at this base at that point.
Yes, and that's what this guy seems to be saying. That, like, this was sort of where they were filling in the paperwork, and, you know, his paycheck was coming from this place, but as far as he can tell, he didn't report for duty at this base for a year.
So, is there anyone that you can find who's still on the base that would have bunked with him or worked with him when before he, you know, right before he left?
It's quite a long time ago. I can do some digging.
That'd be great.
He'll come back and he'll say, like, there were a couple of other first lieutenants at the time who sort of started on the base at the same time, and all long retired, has information, you know.
Do any of them happen to be between here and the downed airplane?
One of them is still actually in Billings, as far as you can tell.
Okay, great. So I will try to find that person then.
Okay. Very good. Agent Wood. Do we have Jim?
Yep.
Sorry. Okay. So, you, while you're staking out the place, you know, it hits around 5 p.m. and people start streaming out of the place. And around sort of 6 or 7, you see eventually sort of the lights start flicking off around the place, and some more people leave. At some point you see a car pull up, and what you assume is like a night guard wanders into the building.
Okay. Other than that, is there night shift going in, or is this place small enough that they don't really?
It doesn't look like there's a night shift. It looks like they shut down. They just operate.
Okay.
Daytime cool. hours.
Then I will wait for all the activity to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And probably give it about an hour after the last person has left the building.
Mm-hmm. Probably takes you to sort of 9 o'clock or so.
And then go in.
Which way are you going, in the front or the back?
The back door by the, I believe,
yep.
There's like, the employee parking is out mm-hmm, back mm-hmm. there.
Yep.
So we just pull in and park in the employee parking and just, walk right in and badge ourselves in.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. The badge opens the back door.
Is there signage saying where things are?
Yeah, there absolutely is. There's a sign, sort of, shows one way to offices and reception, shows another way to morgue and what would the appropriate word be? Not a
cold storage.
Yeah, cold storage and examination facilities.
Yep. That's what we're looking for. The one that indicates bodies are stored here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we will go there.
You can actually hear come in from down the corridor towards the reception area the sounds of some kind of sports game.
Okay, that's fine. I'm actually going to... So there was only one guard that came in?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to walk towards where the sounds of the game are.
Sure.
And just kind of poke my head in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good evening. Just here to do some late night work. Just wanted to check in, let you know that we're here. We'll be in and out shortly.
Yeah, so you see the security guard. He's there. He's got a laptop, and it's open up, and he's obviously streaming some kind of game. And he quickly sort of folds it shut and straightens himself up. Oh, I didn't realize anyone was going to be in tonight.
Don't worry about it. Who's winning?
It's the and he says some sports team.
You got any money on this one?
Yeah, hasn't been going so well for me lately, but I've got a good feeling about this one.
Well, good luck. We'll be out of your hair shortly.
Yeah. And he you have a
and then I'm
good night, doctor.
And we'll go. We'll go to bodies are stored and rifle through whatever information is available that kind of indicates, I'm kind of picturing the usual kind of freezers on the wall.
Yes, absolutely. So you walk into the the cold storage room, and you've got the typical kind of like sliding tubes, sort of maybe three tall, and you've got sort of 12 across, and it's clear that some of them are sort of open or just like pulled slightly out and they've got nothing in. There's ones that are occupied, so to say, and they each have a little tag, actually a handwritten or probably a printed tag, and you can quite readily find the one for Amanda Griffin, and you do not find one of these tubes for Tybalt Greaves, but you sort of looking around the room, you realize there are other storage, there's like freezers and
I think he was like scooped up in some baggies, so
yeah
we might have to search a little bit to find the appropriate Rubbermaid container or whatever he's. So we'll pull her body out and stick it on a gurney.
Yep, you can do that. You pull it open and there's a would it be in a body bag in the freezer? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, so you pull it out.
We'll put it in a body bag. We'll take a body bag off the stack and
yep, I mean you open it up and there's the body of a young mid-20s African-American woman. You see that she has sort of fairly serious wounds to the face.
Okay. Yep, we'll put some rubber gloves on and get her into a body bag, stick her on a gurney, and search her around to see if we can find what's his Greaves.
Okay. So you're just sort of going into these other storage areas.
Well, if there's like if there's some clipboards on the wall with lists of who's there, or
yep. Okay. Give me a
pop open some freezer doors and look around and. What am I rolling? Search, you said.
Search, yes.
Well, that's a pretty good result. What is my search? My search is 70, and I rolled a 27, so that's a success.
Okay. Yes, you can identify basically a small carrying case that says Tybalt Greaves on it.
Okay, we'll stick that in the body bag with the girl.
Okay.
And then Detective Dunsner will start wheeling the gurney out the back door to put them in our car.
Yep.
And I will return to the guard station.
Uh-huh.
How's the game going?
Oh, not well.
Hasn't turned around your way, huh?
It's not my bloody year.
Well, sorry to hear that. Best of luck. We'll be on our way. Have a good night.
Yeah. You too.
And then I will go join Detective Dunsner, who hopefully by then has the gurney out by the car. We'll stick the body bag in the car somewhere, maybe just in the back seat, if it won't fit in the trunk. Or,
yep.
Push the gurney back inside and drive away.
Okay. Where are you driving to?
We are driving to wherever it is that Agent Walters and Agent Kane are. I mean, they're the ones that we're delivering. They're the whole point of this. So we gotta get these remains to them. So wherever they are, and wherever they want us to take them, I might give them a call and say, "We have a body and a Tupperware container. for you to look at. Where do you want? Where do you want to meet?
Oh, great. Well, I'd say meet somewhere where we have medical equipment to check this out.
Okay. Where would that be?
And I don't know. I was gone for a couple sessions, and it looks like I was with.
There has to be some kind of CDC facility here, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'll look it up on my internal CDC directory. Where's the field office for Seattle or wherever we're at?
Yeah, I mean, so Roberta certainly would. Yeah, she is based here. There are CDC labs.
That seems like as good an option as any.
Yep.
Sure. So how are you doing this? Are you just going to drive up to the CDC facilities and carry this body bag in?
No, I think call ahead, say... Maybe have Roberta call and say that she has some visiting scientists that are working on a case and, you know, need to use the lab for a couple hours.
Okay. Yeah. You can,
you know, go about it the polite way.
Easily organize that. So probably it was going to be getting on for like 11 by the time you have transported the body to this facility.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll follow Agent Kane's direction to get the body inside, and then I'll find a place to take sit down and take a nap while they're working.
Okay, you can absolutely do that. So, the other side of the country, Washington D.C. Anne, you are. You land.
Yep.
Walk off the plane.
Yep, on the plane ride over, I would have got internet. I would have tried to find out more about Aaron Silverman, where his office is. Do we ever hear what his law firm was? I feel like I called him.
Yes. You know that it is called... Marcus Silverman and Green.
Okay. So I would have done any, you know, just a standard Google search or whatever.
Sure.
On that firm.
I'm pretty sure you had already done that. And yep. you already had the address.
At about the time she lands, we were going to call or scheduled to land. We were going to call too with the Ortega information.
You can have that call.
Excellent.
Who is?
Oh, I'm sorry. So yeah, we can just, I don't know. So, Anne, did you make it okay? Good flight, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, we got some more information for you. Might be there. Potential holdings down there. You know, you're investigating with Silverman. Apparently, it's owned by a single man, Robert, or a single employee. Some PhD named Robert Ortega, and he also owns Ansel Incorporated, which is DOD contractor company there for the government that does something with body armor. So you might be able to do something with that while you're in DC too.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Okay.
So when I get into the taxi, I will try to do a search for Ortega on my phone, because.
Sure.
I guess I could hotwire my hotspot my computer, but yeah.
Yes. Okay. So when you Google Robert Justin Ortega, you get quite a lot of hits, and he's what you find are a sort of a series of like lifestyle articles and sort of puff pieces about how, you know, he's this super successful young inventor, you know, received a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering and then went on to gain a PhD and since then he's just been this amazing success story. He created several key patents in chemistry dealing with these polymer substances, one of which he termed titanite weave. It's considered by many to be like the next generation Kevlar. Then in 2012 he sort of spun this research out into a company called Ansile Incorporated, and it's just taken off. I mean, he founded it in 2012. 4 years later, now it employs 241 people. It has a series of sort of government contracts, and if you can go to Ansile's website and you get the impression he's almost like a kind of Elon Musk type figure. You know, it's there's this bit of a sort of cult of personality around him, and all the company PR stuff sort of paints him as a prodigy who, while he's, you know, his talents are in engineering and chemistry, his true genius is people. And they talk about how he's been able to recruit like the finest people and build this incredible company.
So earlier when I did research, in a note it says that that I found out that Palantia had one employee, Aaron Silverman, but now I'm being told that there's another single employee. Is that just a problem with the scenario, or
possibly?
Okay.
That's
fine. Moving on then. Let's. Yeah. So I will take the Uber to their offices. What time of day is it?
Let's say it's going to be 9 p.m.
Great. I will go right to their offices.
Okay.
What kind of building are they in? Are they in a building that seems like they represent a super company, $3 million of profit, or do they seem like they're kind of a shady brownstone?
It's like a renovated sort of three-story row house. It's in a nice enough part of the city, if you could describe anywhere in Washington D.C. as being nice.
So how difficult do the doors look?
So you're sort of in the this is a mostly residential area, but you know, some of these buildings are like you have maybe a doctor's office and a dentist, and you've got various solicitors firms as well. So there are actually at this time there's not really people coming and going. And looking around, you see there's lights on in some of the houses nearby, but it's fairly quiet. The law firm itself is at 1099 A Street, and as far as you can tell, there's no lights on in the building. The front door does look, it's a big solid door. Has a series of locks on it.
Mm-hmm.
What is your Lockpicking skill. Is that even a skill?
I have craft locksmithing of 30.
Yes, you do. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like it's not just a case of pulling out your lockpicks and 2 minutes later click. There's some fairly chunky locks on this.
Is there a back door?
Yes. You can sort of go round, find your way down the side of the row of houses, and there are a series of gardens out back. It's clear that some of these are residential properties, and some of them are just sort of overgrown or just sort of paved over out back. You can find the one corresponding to the law firm, and if you want to climb over the fence back here, you're
absolutely
back. Yep. It won't make you roll. You can just do that. Make your way up to the back. And there's a much simpler lock back here.
All right. Well, I'd like to pick that lock then. Or...
go for it.
That's a success.
Okay. Yeah. You pull out your lock picks. About 35 seconds later, click, and you are in.
Yeah, I close the door behind me, locking it, and then. So where am I in, like, the kitchen area of this? Or am I
pretty much. It's you've sort of got basic tea and coffee making facilities down here. Okay.
I am just going to go look for Aaron Silverman's office because I don't know these other people are involved in anything at all. I just want to look around his office.
Yep. So the ground floor is doesn't seem to have anything really related to the offices. There's like a room maybe for people to just meet and chat casually. As you head up to the second story, you see a series of doors, and one of them is marked Green, one of them's marked Marcus, and the other is Silverman.
Great. Is that door locked?
It is not.
Great. I open it up and I walk inside and close the door behind me again.
Yeah. So you've probably been in law offices before. It's a large sort of partner's desk dominating one side of the room, surrounded by just huge bookcases full of legal code books, lots of filing cabinets. It's very neat in here. The partner's desk itself is very well ordered. There's an in tray. There's a space for a laptop, you assume. You can see that there's an Apple keyboard and mouse, but no actual laptop there.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna just sort of get a general sense of the office. I mean, it sounds like he's just neat and orderly. Sure. So that's fine. And then I will look into his well-organized files for under Palentia as well as Ortega and Seal.
Sure. Yes. So, I mean, looking around, the one other sort of thing you see that's decorative in this office is a large, a single large photograph. it's framed and it's sort of rather prominent on the wall of the side you've just come in from, and you see a you looked up their web page, so you would have seen a there would have been pictures of each of the three partners, and you see one man who does look like a younger Silverman, and he's standing next to a tall, thin, well-dressed man, maybe in his 60s, in front of a large corporate headquarters sign that reads March Technologies.
Okay. So I recognize Silverman, but not the other two. So I will take a picture of that and I will send it. I am not as worried about text going back. I will send it back to Lester.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, someone's writing in notes. It's not the other partners, though, right? It's not Silverman and Marcus and.
No, it doesn't appear to be.
Okay. Then I will look through Ortega and Palencia and Agile or whatever the agency.
Ansile. Yeah. Okay, sure.
And I'm not really reading them. I'm pulling out the files and I'm taking pictures and I'm then sending them away.
Yeah. So you find it's clear the law company does service multiple clients, but you go into say one of these filing cabinets and there will be half of one drawer for the other clients, one of which is actually Dr. Tybalt Greaves. You see a number of pages related to patent deals and patent protection and things you already knew that this company handled. And virtually everything else is in some way dedicated to the business dealings of Robert Justin Ortega and Ansile Incorporated.
All right, so I'm mostly going to look.
There's a lot of data here.
Yeah,
it's virtually all in paper form.
Yeah, so I'm mostly going to look for paper form that has names and addresses and phone numbers and that sort of thing. I'm not really sure how I would sort of break it down other than that. I'm just looking for sort of who to go to next type stuff. That makes sense.
So in virtually all of these dealings, when the law firm is operating on behalf of Justin Ortega, Robert Justin Ortega, the only contact information is the law firm. And then there's details of various other companies. So you can see there's, for instance, there'll be a case where Ansile has bought out a smaller firm and there's identifying information of say the other company's CEO and CFO, that kind of thing. You can find Robert Ortega's home address, and that leads you to it's a luxury penthouse in Washington DC, and you can see he owns other properties in Manhattan. You probably could have found this information through public sources anyway, so it's not necessarily.
Okay. Is there any tax forms or anything here?
The There are tax forms for Potentia Holdings and there are those. There are not tax forms for Ansel Incorporated.
Okay. And not for any of their individual clients either.
You get the impression this isn't an accountancy firm, it's a law firm.
Yeah, that's fine. I guess I'm just going to keep eye on the time and till around four or so, which is like 7 hours. I'm just going to go through and take pictures and just see what I find later on.
Yeah, I mean, you realize that there's so much information that is probably the best approach. Try and just get as much of it as possible and then try and analyze it later.
Oh.
Okay, so you can certainly do that. How long are you going to spend here?
I'm going to spend until I think it's reasonable that somebody might come into work. So let's say 4 a.m. or so, and then head out from there. I don't want to get caught here.
Okay.
So whatever 7 hours of research will get me.
Sure. Okay. I am assuming, but I don't really want to put words or actions into your character. I'm assuming you're doing this like with the lights off and.
Yes, I'm pulling the paper. I'm using the light from my phone.
Sure, sure.
Okay. And then taking the picture with the flash of my phone. Sorry, what did you say was on the photo? It's those guys in front of a sign. Oh, March Technologies. I'll try to find that folder as well and try to. I mean, I don't know if that's connected. If that's just a little folder, I'll take all of those files as well.
Yes, you do find some papers related to March Technologies, stock grants. There's various company. Filings for like appointment and dismissal of directors. There's nothing that really sort of explains what the company is.
That's okay. I'm just trying to get enough. Again, I'm just assembling the data. I have a long flight home in which to sort of read through it all.
Sure. Okay.
I don't have anything other than, you know, Ortega, Palencia, not the name, but March Technologies. Potentia.
Yep. Polenta. Okay. Can you make me a stealth roll with a, I'm going to say plus 40, because you're being relatively.
Let's see. Conscious. I rolled a 39, so I don't know. Stealth is 40, so.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like you didn't need the bonus. Okay. Yeah. You spend most of the evening, photographing files, and you're pretty sure you sort of put things back in their place by the time you.
And did I will take a picture of the picture as well.
Yep, I thought you'd already done that, so that's absolutely fine. Sure. Okay.
And then guess try to make a flight to go back home again, because I don't know any reason why I would stick around here. Oh, actually, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait, and actually, I'm going to go to a hotel and go through this paperwork to see if there's something comes up from it that seems useful to delay me driving, you know, flying back again. Like, I don't want to fly back and then be like, oh man, I should look up this company.
Sure. Okay. Let us then switch back to Seattle and Peter Walters.
Yeah. I'm going to be making some medical rolls.
Yes. So who's with you when this is going on? I assume what is everyone else doing? So Jim character, you're just sitting outside.
Mike is taking a nap. Taking a nap. He's doing the classic hat over the face, lean back in a chair with his feet up on the desk.
At this stage, Detective Dancer has probably gone home because she is tired. I assume Roberta Kane is with you, Peter.
Yeah.
Assisting. Mm-hmm. Carlos is off doing stuff somewhere else and has been dealt with. Lester Green, where are you when this is all going on? Have you met up with these guys?
No, we were going to go to the, and I don't think we would need, let me get back to the names. I don't think we would need the local detective Duncer sure. to do this, but Shavosky, the FBI agent, and I were going to try to get a hold of all the evidence at the...
Right. You know, and you do want to do this tonight? You don't want to get some rest or...
Right. It'd be a good idea, I think, to do this again. There'll be fewer people to have to cut through. I don't know if we'll be able to get the all the information out, okay. but at least, okay. Yeah, less questions about why are you nosing into my case, things like that.
Okay. So you're off at the police department trying to do that. Okay. So let's switch to Peter. You have this body bag laid out on a medical examination table.
And there's a snap of nitrile glove, and I get to autopsying.
So you unzip the body bag, and you see there's the body of Amanda Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
As naked as the day she was born. And this other sort of hard shell case that is marked Tybalt Greaves.
Okay. I guess I'll open the case and see what I'm working with for Tybalt Greaves.
Sure. So, opening the case...
Just like a couple mason jars of goo or something?
What you have is a foot and... remind myself what you have.
An eyeball in a jar or something like that?
there's very little here. There is... why is this all in the wrong place in the scenario? Let's see, yeah, more or less. You've got the foot, you've got like a fragment of head, like the upper skull. And around the maybe a hand as well. And there is basically also a jar in which you have this sort of congealed hard substance. It's got a bluish tint to it, and it's thick. It's solid. It's like you know, if you didn't know any better, if you hadn't been told it was organic in origin, you would have thought this is some kind of like epoxy or resin. It's
weird.
It's solid and hard. Yeah.
Well, then I guess.
And there's sort of the same material around the edges of the body fragments that are remaining.
Okay, so I guess I want to try and start running some genetic sequencing and some tests on the blue unidentified biological substance,
mm-hmm.
And then some biology tests as well. And then while that stuff is, you know, sequencing or running or processing or whatever, I can further examine the body.
Okay. So the hard sort of crystalline substance, you can chip some fragments of that off.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to try and sequence that.
Okay. So I'll run some like initial tests, right? Like
sure,
so
sure.
Biology to see, okay, is this organic, you know, organic, inorganic, like then maybe take a sample, throw it under the mass spec, figure out what it's made out of, if there's anything in there that I could run through a genetic sequence or, you know, determine if I need to. Sequence the genome or whatever. So
obviously you have if say you take the foot, for instance, you on one end you have normal biological matter. There's tissue, it's looks normal. At the edge where you've got this sort of crystallized goo.
You
can chip it away, you can cut off fragments of it. You run the typical test to identify, are there cellular material? Is there any, the tests just aren't coming up with anything conclusive. There's, you're not even sure that this stuff is biological.
Well, maybe I'll take some, chip it off, and try and dilute it, not dilute it, but maybe break it down in some sort of acid or basic solution and try and make it a little easier to work with.
Yeah, I mean, you can. Okay, so you have chemistry as well. You can continue to sort of try and analyze that. You maybe take some bits off, send them out to run like mass spectrometry or NMR or something like that. So you're going to try and figure out what's going on with that. Those tests are going to take some time. So
that's probably what I'll be doing for a while.
Okay. Are you going to do anything with Amanda's body in the meantime?
Just normal autopsy. See if there's any evidence of this crystalline substance. Infecting her as well.
The only sort of visible injuries that you see on her are some rather severe looking wounds to the mouth, the lower jaw, and the sort of side of the face and neck. Lots of little sort of lacerations and puncture wounds. It looks like something basically tried to eat her face.
Great. Is this consistent with any other wounds we've seen during this investigation?
Not really. You have a series of photographs that show Tybalt Greaves' body in the process of decay. If you remember, when they first came onto the site, they said he had severe sort of neck injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And looking down, it looks like something has basically ripped his neck and esophagus out.
Jesus.
But then the subsequent photos just show it, the entire body just sort of disintegrating into this goo substance that then rapidly solidifies.
So, So the jar of goo, that's all solidified.
That's also, yes, this hard crystalline polymer substance.
Okay. I guess I'll try and figure out from the marks on Amanda's face, I'll try and figure out, take some measurements and see if I can get an approximation of the bite radius of the thing that tried to eat her face.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
maybe try and backwards reconstruct what it might look like, the mouth or jaw or whatever it is that tried to eat her.
Sure. And I mean, you've seen animal bites and wounds like that before. This doesn't appear to be, you know, there's no teeth mark as such. There's not like a regular array of incisions. This does seem to be just like a, so almost like something like latched on and just ripped, and just took portions of skin and flesh with it.
Okay. Well, not sure what else I can do here other than...
Can you make an alertness roll?
Yeah. Alertness. Oh, 96. That's not good. Nope.
Okay. So you're puzzling over what could have created these wounds, and you turn around and you go to the computer terminal you've been using, and you see that one of the results of the mass spectrometry are back. And it seems to sort of confirm that it's like a polymer type substance. It is mostly carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. It has this strange in various points. It seems to have it's like it has bubbles of carbon dioxide inside it. It's not something you've ever encountered before.
Weird. Oh, that's weird. So it's like it's breathing, like it's exhaling tiny bubbles.
Perhaps.
Interesting. And the actual blue substance itself, well, that's the mass spectrometer. I guess DNA sequencing. Try and see if, like, a sample of Thibault's foot and a sample of this blue goo, if they end up having, like, the same DNA sequence. Basically, what I want to try and find out is, like, is this goo something separate, or is this what he's turning into?
Sure. Okay. So you can try to sort of put some of the substance under a microscope. If you take like a portion on the kind of boundary between the flesh and this
yeah, to substance, see how it's interacting.
Yeah, you see regular normal cells on one side, and on the other side there are none. It's as if the cells themselves have kind of dissolved and reconstituted into this other polymer.
Okay. Now, all the blue stuff or goo or polymer or whatever we want to call it, all of it that I have in my possession right now is all solidified. There's none that's still
correct
gooey. I want to try and like just take a piece of it and stick it on like the toe of Amanda and see what happens if there's any interaction.
None.
Hmm.
So, do you still want to you want to go ahead with a autopsy?
Yeah.
Okay. So you begin just with an examination of the body. Looking at the head is the most obvious sort of source of injuries. You can't see any sort of other wounds or signs of injury on the rest of the body. As you're feeling the various sections of the body, you make your way down to the her stomach. You sort of feel rib cages as you go down. At the bottom of the rib cage, you're just sort of I forgot what's the technical term. There's a technical term for feeling within. As you're doing this, something twitches inside.
Oh, what the? Then I'll grab like a tool or something, and then with the back of the tool, I'll poke in that area.
Yeah, you poke and it twitches. You see something underneath the surface of the skin twitching away.
Oh, God. All right. I'm going to get out of the room and I think probably put on better protective gear. So maybe like a hazmat suit.
Sure. You can definitely find one of those in a CDC facility. So you walk out, you see Jim's character, Michael, sat there.
Mikey, wake up.
What how's it going?
Mikey.
You learn anything yet?
I found something weird. I need you to suit up.
Me? I don't know anything about autopsying or doing anything like that.
No, but you have your gun, right?
Well, yeah.
Okay. So suit up. I need you in there with me.
Oh, I don't understand what's happened. What am I going to do? Shoot a dead body? Fine.
So then we'll both suit up and then... I guess I'll turn on, the ventilation system, give it the room some negative pressure, whatever, so it's sealed. And then I will proceed to open that part of the stomach while Mikey covers me.
Okay. So you head back in, sort of suited up. You grab a scalpel, begin to cut an incision.
Do I see this moving around thing before he starts to cut?
So you, when the body's just lying there, no, okay. You don't see it moving.
Okay, so I'll just be standing there with my gun out.
Sure. as he, he's going to have to sort of reach down and place one hand sort of on the surrounding tissue.
Then it starts twitching.
Then it does, you notice it sort of twitching a bit.
Okay, now I'm pointing my gun. What the hell is in there, Peters? Bugs?
I don't know.
A rat?
But I'd rather be safe than
dead.
Yes, dead. So just be ready. Who knows?
I will take careful aim at the area of twitching as he starts cutting.
Okay. So sort of help me understand how this is. So on one side of the body, we have...
No, let's not have one side and the other, because then he's going to shoot me. Let's have him next to me.
Yeah, okay.
No, not next to you. I'm thinking like down by the feet.
Okay, that's fine. So then we're at perpendicular.
Yes.
Sure. Okay. And you are both wearing full hazmat suits at this point.
Yes.
Okay. Can you give me a dexterity roll as you incise?
17. That is going to be a success.
Yeah. Okay. So you reach down. You slice open the upper layer of skin. You're having to. You start to see that the twitching just sort of increases at this point, and there's something sort of underneath, and it's pressing up in various points, and it's starting to move in a more animated fashion. You continue in. Yeah, you're going to have to cut through a layer of muscle.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. You continue. You make a secondary incision below the skin, and you puncture through into the chest cavity.
Yes.
Sanity roll, please.
I thought that was coming. Yes, I made it. 15. Under 65.
Michael?
06. Handily made.
Okay, so you both just lose 1 point. As this thing emerges from the opening you've just created, it's a mass of sort of bluey white cartilage, and you know it looks biological, it looks organic, it has what you recognize as musculature on top of this strange cartilage-like skeleton. If anything, resembles some kind of sea spider. But you see there's a cluster of eyes in the center. They are human eyes. There's sort of, you know, six or seven of them blinking away and looking up at you, and it just bursts out of this hole and sort of propels itself across the room and lands on a countertop nearby, sort of scattering surgical instruments about. You see that it has sort of four or five limbs, and before your eyes, it grows another one. It's reconstituting itself. What's very disturbing is that the limbs are kind of recognizable as human.
Oh God.
At the end of some are like vestigial sort of, you know, small malformed hands, and at the others are feet. And it looks at you.
No.
And then it jumps onto the side of the wall and begins climbing up the stairs.
Mikey did it.
I think I would be shooting at it just from the initial movement. I would be.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm gonna run to grab a fire extinguisher because I don't have a gun.
Sure. So let's have Mike make make a firearms roll minus 20 because this thing is small and fast.
Minus 20. Let's see. So 31 goes to 51, which is. Are we spending luck? I don't remember.
No.
Oh. Oh, I missed by one.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah, you shoot the wall.
Pulls one of those last minute twitches out of the way.
Pretty much. Okay. What are you doing, Walters, Peter?
I run and get a fire extinguisher and try and blast it.
Sure. Okay. Make a luck roll. It's just a 50%.
Yeah, that's right. I got a 0.5.
Yeah. Okay. You find a fire extinguisher.
Cool. So then maybe I'll smash it next round.
Sure. Okay. This thing is going to. Well, Michael is shooting at it, so it is going to propel itself onto your face
or
your face mask. I'll give you a dodge roll if you can make that to try and dodge out the way. It is going to make basically an opposed athletics roll. Ooh. Ooh. Okay.
Sorry, whose face is it jumping in?
Yours.
Yours.
Oh.
It okay. It rolls a critical success on its athletics roll.
And I get. Sorry, what skill are you looking for?
For you, dodge.
For me, dodge. Let's see. Dodge is 50, and I roll a 13.
Okay, so that's a success, but not a critical success. So this thing lands on the face mask. You know, you're suited up in these big, you know, yellow, thick rubber hazmat suits, and you see it just it lands basically directly dead center into your field of vision.
That's lovely.
Yeah, and it starts. What you notice is that the plastic, the sort of, you know, thick perspex on the visor starts hissing and sort of turning black in places.
Yep. Some kind of acid.
Yep.
I'm gonna grab it and pull it off.
Okay, so you're grabbing it. Let's have an appropriate roll here. Is there any? Yeah, give me an unarmed combat roll.
And that I can do, maybe. 48 out of 60, so that's a success.
Yeah, you grab it, and what are you trying to do? Just sort of fling it across the room? What's your goal here?
So are these the hazmat suits that are like one piece, or are they the ones with the big hoods? So like the whole top comes off.
Yeah, I think the top piece can come off. Yeah.
Okay. In that case, I'm going to do something incredibly stupid. If I think this will actually work with this kind of suit, so having grabbed a hold of it, I want to hold it with one hand, grab a hold of the hood with the other hand, and pull the hood inside out so the thing is wrapped up inside the hood.
Okay. Yes.
And then yell at Walters to get a box or a jar or something to stuff this thing in.
Okay. So I think first roll, definitely you pull it, you pull it off of your face. Yeah.
Yep.
And you're now holding it in one gloved hand. Again, Michael and PC, you see that the sort of thick rubber starts smoking.
Quickly, Walters, quickly.
Yeah, I grab some sort of metal, some sort of stainless steel, you know, big prep tray or bin or whatnot to try and, you know, have them be able to throw it in.
Okay, you're looking for a stainless...
You know, like, yeah, like a big steel kind of, it would be like
maybe a prep bin. Tray.
Sure. Yeah, oh, a waste bin, something like that.
Yeah, okay. Sounds fine. Let's have Michael make an unarmed combat roll again to try and keep... This is going to be an opposed one. Try and keep hold of it.
It's a success.
Okay, this thing fails. You have hold of it still. Okay, I'm going to need to look up an armor value for this. Bear with me. Do we have armor? Hazmat suit has entries for hazmat suits, but does not say what the armor is. Okay, I'm just going to say it has an armor rating of that. So it has been on you for two rounds. Ouch. Okay, yeah, you are still holding it, but you see before your eyes basically the glove. I assume it's your right hand, or no? Which hand would you be holding your gun in?
That's a good. Well, when it jumped on me, I would have dropped the gun.
Okay, you dropped the gun.
So I would grab it with my right hand, wrap it up in the hood, just trying to keep it contained extra with my left hand.
Yep.
And then have the hood Death Spider package in both hands, waiting for Walters to give me something to
Okay. So the first hand that you grabbed it with, you now see that the thick rubber has basically completely dissolved, and you can now actually feel your skin making contact with this thing.
Nope.
Are you gonna drop it?
No, you can't.
No, I'll have.
You're going to try and transfer it to your other hand that still has a.
Yeah, you know, the left hand with the hood and wrap it up and, you know, hot potato it.
Okay.
Hurry up, Walters.
So you can grab it. You can now shove it into the hood. And you're basically holding that shut like a.
Like a bag.
Like a bag. Okay. Okay.
Cool. Throw it in this big metal trash can.
Sure.
Stuff it in there. Do we have something? And close the trash
can. And then grab like a tray, like a metal tray, stick over the top to make a seal.
Okay.
And then put something heavy on top of it.
Right. So you sort of just you hear this hissing and smell this disgusting acrid, bitter smell of this nasty smoke that's sort of coming up off the burning rubber. And inside this thing is sort of making this nasty squealing noise.
And, does it seem like the metal's eating away?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because we watch it for a moment. Does the metal start to discolor?
So, how long are you watching it for?
Well, I don't know. I'll look at.
I mean, I want to make we want to make sure it's contained.
Sure. Okay. So, so you what are you doing? You stepping back? You've put something heavy on top of this thing?
Or I guess I'll just be standing there holding down the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I would like just catch my breath for a moment. Yeah. And then
Mikey, are you okay? Did it get you? Did it bite you?
Nope. I'm good. And I'm gonna pick my gun up.
Yep.
And then what I want to do is we'll just slide the lid open just enough to get the barrel in, and then I'm just gonna empty the magazine into that trash can. Unless Walters tells me that's a bad
idea. I mean, if we've got it contained, I think we should keep it contained, and then if it's alive, we might be able to get more information out of this thing, as little as I want it to be alive.
Okay, you're the scientist. I'll leave you here to work with it. I'll go back outside.
No. I you got to cover me while I'm keeping this shut.
Can you make me a luck roll? Just one of you. This is effectively a party luck roll.
Do you want
to go ahead, Mikey? Go ahead, Mikey. No, you roll it. Then I can blame you if it goes pear shaped.
It has gone pear shaped. That's a
no. Oh no!
You hear a knock at the door. Is everything okay in there? I thought I heard a gunshot.
Sorry, accidental discharge. These things happen.
Everything's fine.
Are you sure? Sounds like we have to fill out some kind of form.
Yep. I'm sure Agent Kane will take care, or Dr. Kane, or whatever we're supposed to refer to her as. We'll take care of it.
Okay. Make me a some kind of roll. make another luck roll.
I get a 92.
Yeah, well, here, I'll yell out some sort of, like, we're experiencing some kind of, you know, outbreak protocol, blah, blah, something. It's fine. We just need, don't come in.
Oh, yeah, because actually you have Roberta in the room with you, don't you? She has been here all along.
I would assume so. That would make sense. Yeah,
let's have her make a sanity roll. Oh, dear. Okay. She loses 1 point. Dear, oh dear. Okay. Roberta's will actually go over and say, everything's fine, and sort of opens the door and steps out to try and contain the situation. So, okay, you guys, you the smoking has mostly stopped, or at least the acrid, nasty smell. There's no longer sort of thick black smog coming out of the trash can, and the noise of sort of struggle that you've heard has mostly died down.
Okay.
Well, this is a CDC facility, so I assume they would have like one of those big Perspex boxes with the.
Yeah, like a big hood.
Yeah.
Like a chemical hood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that we could transfer this thing into to keep so that the science team can go to work on it.
Yeah, but that doesn't help because it burned straight through Perspex. So I think, well, man, I don't know if there even is a thing because I'm not an actual science person in real life. But is there some sort of like steel, some sort of like fully enclosed steel box, maybe with cameras on the inside that I could examine this thing in?
Okay. I see what you're saying. So you are you have the trash can is on the floor. This thing is inside it, and you've got a metal tray over the top of it that you're holding down, and you're sort of, are you pushing down on it at this point?
Yeah, I'm holding it to make sure that there's, if it tries to force its way out, that it's not able
sure.
to.
Sure. Okay. So, you know, you're there, you hear Roberta outside, you know, trying to calm the situation down. And you're, obviously, you and Michael are trying to figure out what to do in here. You feel the floor beneath you just kind of like crumples.
Oh, great.
The whole mass of trash can and tray and floor tile just sort of collapses downwards.
I knew I should have gone with
Okay, I'm going to Yeah, I'm gonna slide the top back and yeah. see. And it's there's a what, hole there what, now.
You,
and
yeah,
it's
you gone. See you see like the smoking remnants of the biohazard headpiece, and there's just this kind of this hole in the floor.
Is there one of those big red emergency fire alarm? No.
There's
contamination
broken.
Contamination.
Seal the building and
I think as you as you
emergency protocol.
As you go to press one of those, we can end the session here.
Yeah, I'm gonna go hit that.
Awesome. That was great.
Just for the record, Agent Peters, next time I am going to just shoot it. I think my original plan there was the best one.
I tend to agree with you, Mikey.
Okay.
Jesus, so, Jonathan.
Are you glad to be back playing Delta Green?
Absolutely.
Good time.
All right.
Well, we'll see what happens next week.
Yeah.
This is probably the second one of these we have running around. Wow.
Right.
Well, aren't there samples in a crash plane somewhere that Carlos is headed towards by himself?
I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
We get to hear Edwin say, "No, no, no,
Death Spider, no."
Yeah. Well, that was a great scene.
All right. Awesome, guys.
Cool. Hey, thanks.
Thanks for that.
Have a good week.
Bye.
See you
later, guys.